This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And we start with Jim Henderson, the president of the University of Louisiana System, who is a busy man, and this is always a time when he has one eye on the universities he manages and another on the state capitol, because it is session time. The session opens today, the governor addressing lawmakers and the rest of us at high noon. And Jim Henderson, good morning to you. Nice to have you in studio once again.
Good morning, Jim. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, tell us about the session and your prospects for what will be done in the COVID age, with the state getting some federal funding that will keep things afloat for a while, but is higher education once again in peril?
Well, you think about this session and compare it to last year when session started. Of course, that was the first day that we realized we were in the midst of a global pandemic, and the session was going to look unlike anything we had ever seen. This year, we start off with a lot more optimism. We have an executive budget, probably the best reinvestment in higher education and talent development in 13 years for the state of Louisiana, which is promising for us. We're finally going to get a reinvestment in faculty. We're going to get some mandated costs covered, and we're going to do the things necessary for colleges and universities to be successful.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Dr. Jim Henderson is with us, pride of Natchitoches and Northwestern State University, and he, of course, has gotten good reviews for his work as the man who heads the University of Louisiana System. And a reminder also that signature support for our program is provided by First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Now, before we get to the nuts and bolts of the session and where we are in higher education in Louisiana, we do have an expanded University of Louisiana System, the University of New Orleans, one of the biggest schools of higher education in Louisiana, is now a member. How many students now?
Well, University of New Orleans is a little over 8,000. Of course, they had a tremendous dip after Hurricane Katrina, saw a little bounce back. I can tell you they're on the third consecutive year of growth, so things are looking good down there.
In the whole system, how many students?
Right at 92,000, of course.
92, which would make it the biggest system.
Biggest system in Louisiana and one of the top 20 largest higher ed systems in the country.
In the country. Now, in the past, when we've had austere times, and frequently we do in Louisiana, we have lawmakers, they bloviate about, we got to get rid of some universities. We got to get rid of some universities. It never happens because we know what would happen if somebody really tried to get rid of one of those universities, and they all have a place in their community. But is it time to get beyond that and talk about other things, or is that always going to be part of the conversation?
I think it'll always be part of a conversation because it's a convenient red herring that grabs people's attention. But when you look at the $10.9 billion economic impact of these nine institutions, almost 150,000 jobs directly associated with our work, it speaks to how these institutions are economic drivers, both in their regional economies and, of course, statewide collectively.
What do you see as the biggest issues in the session this year?
Well, I think that they're dealing with a whole lot of money, right? They've gotten influx of first economic growth has been better than they expected, so they're getting revenue from their general sources. Of course, a lot of federal monies have come in, and everyone remembers the Katrina economy. When tons of federal, billions of federal dollars came in, they had the construction economy took off, and it set us up for what became the largest disinvestment in higher education in our history over the next 8 to 10 years. And so people are trying to set us up so that we don't make the same mistakes after Hurricane Katrina and Rita. I want to make sure that we don't use that as an excuse not to do needed investments in developing our people.
Do you feel more comfortable since the state does have this federal money?
Well, I think it always helps. I think that we've got a legacy in Louisiana of under-investing in higher education, and when you compare us to our peer states, what makes me uncomfortable is looking forward, like 2030, when we start thinking about the future of work and how a more educated populace than ever before is going to be essential for both quality of life and economic competitiveness.
Well, higher education, of course, is always first on the chopping block, along with health care, because of the way our Constitution works. There has been talk of trying to change that. That's also abated for at least a little while, but is that practical to talk about, changing the Constitution so that these are not always first in line for cuts?
You look at our Constitution. We've had hundreds of amendments since the Constitution of 1974. And look at other states nearby who are still working on their constitutions from the early part of the 20th century. We always want to go to structure. Every one of those amendments that was passed to the Constitution was passed by two-thirds of the legislature and by we the people. So it's hard to go in and undo those. I don't know if our problem is really as much structural as it is about vision. And we need a vision that says we're going to develop our people mm-hmm. so that they're, one, prepared for work, but two, prepared to be global citizens. If we've learned anything from COVID-19, it's how we're all more connected than ever before. And so we're going to prepare our folks to work with a much more diverse audience.
877-217-5757, Katie Ann McDonald producing, and we go to Lafayette, where I think the largest school in the Louisiana system is
Raging
located.
Cajuns. Yeah.
The UL Raging Cajuns. Jacoby in Lafayette, you're on Talk Louisiana, Jacoby.
Yeah, hello. My son was a student last fall semester, and he tanked all of his classes except his one in-person class. Yeah. And I talked to college professors, and they're all saying the same thing, that lack of in-person education and having to go to online really hurt the grades of a lot of students, not just here in Louisiana, but also in places like New York State and Washington State and places like that. Are they going to make any adjustments to the kids' grades? Because you know, the teachers weren't prepared for all that online learning. The students weren't prepared. And just a lot of students did really terribly those two semesters where they had to do online.
I think it's a great question. And all of our schools are operating with some academic standards that will ensure that they're meeting the needs of the students. So mm-hmm. if a student has an issue, he can talk to his academic advisor or someone in academic offices. I will tell you, we worked hard to get about 40% of our classes back online this last fall. With the availability of vaccines, this coming fall is going to look much more like a traditional collegiate experience than it did this year. And I think you're right. It's vital. Online learning can help, but it's not the solution for the vast majority of learners.
When you say it's going to look more like a conventional college experience, does that mean back to the way it was or incremental? What does it mean?
Oh, I think it's going to be much closer to the way it was, right? We know that the vaccines offer a tremendous protection against now both contracting the virus and spreading mm-hmm. the virus. So as we get more needles in arms, it's going to allow us to return much more closer to normal than before. We're going to still have some safeguards in place. We're going to have some physical distancing in place. We're going to mm-hmm. have some masking in place in appropriate areas. But I do think you're going to see us a return to the classroom in large part.
What about athletic events?
Athletic events are important. We're playing spring football in FCS, as you saw this year. In fact, you mentioned the mm-hmm. Demons. The Demons got a big victory Saturday night. Had a classic battle between Southeastern and Nicholls State that had some extracurricular activities, as I understand, after the game. But sports will be back, and I think that's important, not just for the athletic piece of it, because they build community. They bring us together, and they give us something to celebrate. I think it's a sign that life will be returning back to normal.
877-217-5757 for Jim Henderson, president of the University of Louisiana system. And obviously you're aware of the Title IX issues at LSU, and those same standards apply to your system. How does this affect you, all the problems that LSU is having right now?
Well, you know, the Senate Select Committee on Women and Children has had three hearings, and I thought they've done a remarkable job of elevating the issues and talking about some of the challenges. Title IX has been with us for quite some time. We've seen some evolving guidance that comes from the Department of Education on how you address things. We've been working the last couple of years in trying to ensure that we have the healthiest, safest climates on our campuses for women and for all students, for that matter. And Title IX is certainly a part of that. The key is when you have an issue that happens, right, you have some people that will do nefarious things on campus. It's your response that's going to determine the ultimate outcome. Are you responding with fidelity to your mm-hmm. process? And one, are you putting the health and safety of students as the paramount concern? Because that's got to be.
Based on what you know, and you are in charge, do any campuses in your system have the same kinds of issues that LSU has faced?
I will say that we have Title IX issues at all of our campuses. When students are victims of sexual violence, or the new terminology is power-based violence. But what we've seen is a responsiveness from our institutions that addresses those when they come up. We have not seen some of the other challenges where cases maybe not have been handled with transparency that we've seen at LSU.
What about sexual assault?
Well, sexual assault has been a problem. I remember when 30-something years ago when I was working on the newspaper at Northwestern State, the first study came out about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 college women are victims of sexual violence during their college career. It's been with us a long time. I think we've got a lot more awareness. We've got a lot more ability to do prevention. It can't just be about response. We have to change the cultures and be about prevention, again, focusing on the health and safety of students.
877-217-5757 is your number. We're going to take a 90-second pause, and we will return with Dr. Jim Henderson, the president of the University of Louisiana System. He, like the rest of us, will be watching with interest as to what happens today when Governor Edwards opens the legislative session. And we're back with more Talk Louisiana in a minute and a half. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. We're going to spend some more time with Jim Henderson, the president of University of Louisiana System, Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on the air with Dr. Henderson. Hi, Stuart.
I'm Jim, Dr. Henderson, and the audience, as always, good morning. Dr. Henderson, there's been an initiative for years within the state of Louisiana where any individual that is 50 and above should be able to attend, matriculate in any Louisiana university and college complimentary. Invariably, they always profess that there is no money available for this. Will you expound on where this initiative is and why they always lean on the fact that there is never any money available for this wonderful situation?
Oh, I agree. I think it's a wonderful program. As what happens quite often and when legislation is passed to create these types of programs, it always has a clause, and they're dependent upon sufficient revenues from being appropriated by the state legislature. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there have not been any directly appropriated to this. I will tell you this. We have created the Compete Louisiana program at UL System that's designed for those that have some college but no degree. And it gives you a very levelized playing field in terms of a flat fee that's very transparent. We can get you to degree completion very quickly, which gives you back an additional resource, which is called time. But finding ways to return adults to college is going to be essential for us going forward. I believe you're hitting on a perfectly timely issue.
Mm-hmm. In previous shows, as in a year or so ago, you said there was going to be a full court press to try to get some of these people who went to school and acquired a lot of hours and just didn't get the degrees to try to get to the finish line. How's that going?
Well, it's going remarkably well. We did our first annual report that came out at the beginning of this calendar year. This program is going to be brought to scale over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see tens of thousands of the Louisiana adults coming back. But we have 653,000 adults that have some college and no degree.
So that limits say that their number degree. Again?
653,000.
In Louisiana
with That's some college and no degree.
15% of the population.
It's huge. And listen, it caps their ability to move up in terms of their own economic self-sufficiency. Limits their opportunities. And we found a way to deliver that in a way that's actually accessible.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Morning. Dr. Henderson, do the schools in your system have new expensive athletic facilities but leaking libraries?
I will tell you the new digital library will open up at Grambling State in the fall of this year. It's going to be one of the most technologically advanced libraries. When I walked into the library at Northwestern State when I returned as president, it had the same leaking issues and the same ugly carpet that was there when I was as an undergraduate. It's one of the first things we did. You have to have learning communities. You have to show that in your investments. Now, we do have some good athletic facilities, and you know, a tornado came through Louisiana Tech 2 years ago, and we just cut the ribbon on their new baseball and softball and soccer mm-hmm. complex. And so you want to ensure that your facilities are quality and that they speak well for an institution, but they have to take the priority has to be on our academic facilities.
877-217-5757 is your number. There's still time to get in with Dr. Jim Henderson, president of the University of Louisiana System, and Mark Ballard yesterday reporting on the LSU board meeting on Saturday, which some listeners have asked me to ask Dr. Henderson about, notes that the LSU community will weigh in on the finalists of a new university president during the first week of May. And the chair-elect of the LSU board, Remy Starnes, says the committee set an April 19th deadline for applications to replace F. King Alexander. The interim chancellor president, Tom Galligan, is expected to be one of the candidates. Will you, Jim Henderson, be a candidate?
I would say that we have done four presidential searches since I've been the president of the UL system, and those are the most taxing on board members. It requires them to be really diligent to reach out to the constituent groups and ensure they're getting the right leaders for these universities. LSU is the flagship university of Louisiana. As a native Louisianan and someone who's involved in higher education, to deny an interest would not be realistic. Of course, I think there's a tremendous challenge there. I think it would be a rewarding opportunity for anyone that's in my line of work.
It sounds like you will be a candidate, and that's no big secret either. And as stated, it is the flagship university. But it looks like, unlike previous iterations, this one's going to be done publicly, which as a journalist I love, but some people in academia don't like this because you're out there. You have to put yourself out there, and some people don't think that's a good thing.
You know, when we do our searches, we're very transparent in the UL system about putting, you know, having an online interface for people to add their commentary, to talk about what they want in a leader. I think LSU has done a remarkable job, especially when you look at the challenges of this last year with COVID-19 and the hurricane season that we had. Everything is unprecedented these days, and still running a university. Mm-hmm. So it can be quite challenging, but ensuring that you have a transparent process as much as possible, that you can get quality applicants and you can select the next great leader for that institution that's going to be there for the next 10 years at least, we hope.
Well, April 21st is the deadline for the committee, which will choose which candidates to interview, and the applications are April 19th. The interviews will be conducted by April 26th and the finalists by April 30th. So they're trying to get this done quickly, and there is a need because of a lot of things that are going on at LSU that are not so pleasant. And if it's you or somebody else, Dr. Henderson, they're going to be stepping into a hornet's nest. I think you know that. But last week we had former Chancellor Mike Martin on, and he said he would not have abided an order that apparently happened at Jubin's, in which board members came to the then President and Chancellor King Alexander and told him, you're hiring a new athletic director, you're going to have to fire Joe Oliva, and this is how much we're going to pay the new guy. Is that the way it's supposed to work?
Well, you know, board members are not professional educators. They're appointed to these jobs, to do these roles, and it's a very important role. I will tell you that the leadership from the presidency can govern a lot of those things. I've worked with a board in Louisiana for 4 years. I've never experienced anything even remotely like that. Our board members are engaged. They're engaged in generative governance, fiduciary, fulfilling their fiduciary roles, their strategic roles, and they leave running the institution to me and the presidents that run those institutions.
But LSU is a political place. Mike Martin's called it the most political place on the planet, and he's been in academia all over the United States. Is that going to change no matter who is chosen?
I think that we live in a political world, so there's politics associated with my work. I'll be at the Capitol today talking with legislators. Politics is not necessarily a dirty word. It's when politics starts to take precedence over the academic mission of an institution is when it becomes problematic. And again, that's where effective leadership, especially leadership that's very familiar with the landscape of higher education in general, but certainly of Louisiana higher education, can be a game changer in that regard.
Well, some academicians don't like going down to the Capitol. That's not what they were trained to do. But if you're president of LSU, you got to go down to the Capitol and do a job of talking with lawmakers. Are you comfortable doing that?
You know, I've testified probably a couple hundred times over the last 20 years in front of Louisiana committees. It's one of my favorite places to be because it gives you a chance to tell the story of faculty, of students, of research, the power of research to transform Louisiana and the quality of life and our economic growth. So I enjoy that work, and I think you'll find most legislators truly just want to do the right thing. I know that's not what you hear about. That's not the things that we see that generate headlines. But my working with legislators is they want a strong Louisiana economy, and they understand that is dependent upon having strong higher education institutions.
What can LSU be that it isn't? It would seem to be a place of vast potential. It's certainly one of the most beautiful campuses in the world, but beyond the scenic beauty, there have been some missed opportunities. What can it do in the short term and long term that is not being accomplished right now?
Well, so you have the LSU system, which is a great kind of vertically integrated system of institutions, of course, two great medical schools, a statewide ag presence, but being a nationally competitive flagship institution, and not one that tries to replicate what you see in Georgia or Florida or even in the schools in Texas, but one that wants to be Louisiana's flagship and elevate the vision for around higher education, around academics, around research, to a way that's worthy of Louisiana and worthy of its people.
Diversity was an issue that King Alexander got into, and the way he was trying to diversify the campus by relaxing the admission standards got him in hot water with some members of the alumni who were quite vocal. Is that, was he on the right track?
Well, I think diversity and inclusion, ensuring that we have campuses that are a flagship university for all of Louisiana is absolutely important. I don't think you have to relax standards to do that, though. I think that you can. There are a number of academically gifted, my board chair is an example of that, academically gifted student from New Orleans who went to Howard University, kind of the Ivy League of HBCUs. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of students we need to keep at home and bring them to our institutions.
We'll be back and spend a bit more time with Jim Henderson, president of the University of Louisiana System, 877-217-5757. Back after this.
Louisiana Radio Network, I'm Brooke Thorington. Governor Edwards will kick off the 2021 legislative session at 6 p.m. with a speech at Southern University's Mumford Stadium. Edwards will push for legislation to end the state's gender pay gap, which he says remains among the worst in the country, and to end discriminatory practices in setting auto insurance rates.
It's where premiums are based on things having nothing to do with an individual's driving record.
And a bill has been filed that would result in automatic termination of any post-secondary employee who fails to properly report incidents of power-based violence to the campus Title IX coordinator. Star legal director Morgan Lamondre says under this law, if you receive knowledge that someone has committed an act of power-based violence, you must report it.
Because I think what we do know is that a lot of times these aren't isolated incidents. It's serial perpetration. And so at least it does put somebody on the radar.
Current policy only requires Title IX reporting if employees are informed of a victim who is involved with the school, LRN.
Five storms hit Louisiana's coast this past hurricane season. Laura and Delta left a trail of destruction. I'm Insurance Commissioner Jim Donlan. If you're a policyholder trying to complete your insurance claim, the Louisiana Department of Insurance can help. One call to our office and we'll help you understand your rights as a policyholder. We can offer guidance and tips to help you through your claim. If you feel you've been shortchanged by your insurer, we'll gladly review your claim and offer advice on how to proceed. Our goal is to help you recover fully from the storm, to be stronger for tomorrow. Even if your claim has been paid and you then learn of new damages or costs associated with the storm, you probably still have the right to ask your insurance company for additional money. If you need our help, give us a call, 1-800-259-5300, or go to ldi.la.gov. This is Insurance Commissioner Jim Donlan, and we're ready to help you.
Louisiana Department of Insurance, how may I help you?
There's a number of hot-button issues up for the debate in this year's legislative session, but a political analyst doesn't expect many of them to get far. Matt Doyle has more.
There's bills addressing trans issues, marijuana legalization, prison labor reform, and other culture war topics, but...
We see that every year. These bills don't have a lot of long-lasting effects.
That's political analyst Bernie Pensenatter, says the biggest issue this session will be how to spend the $3.2 billion in federal American Rescue Act aid the state is set to receive.
Can we spend money to fix problems that have been hurting Louisiana for the last 30 or 40 years? Are we going to pay down the debt?
I'm Matt Doyle.
And LSU says it does not suspect foul play in the disappearance of Corey Gauthier. The freshman from Opelousas has been missing since Wednesday. Her abandoned car was discovered early Wednesday on the I-10 Mississippi River Bridge. So far, a search of nearby levees has yet to locate her. LouisianaRadioNetwork.com.
This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for being with us. For Talk Louisiana, we continue with Jim Henderson, the president of the University of Louisiana System. He manages... Nine universities, 92,000 students, and he's also trying to get 653,000 Louisianians who did not attain a degree to come back and get to the finish line, and that would be good for our state. I think right now in Louisiana, we still have fewer than a quarter of our residents, adults, who have college degrees. What does a college degree mean? Some people believe, you know, and there are certainly examples of people who've done just fine without them, that it's a bit trite to say that you got to have a degree to succeed.
You know, we've been having some good conversations about that. Across our system and really articulating better what it does mean to have a degree. Certainly, you know what it means if you've got a business degree or an engineering degree. Engineering, you're qualified to do engineering work. But cutting across all of our degrees, really understanding what those core capabilities are, critical thinking, problem solving, effective communications, cultural competence, technological literacy. And by the way, McKinsey just came out with a new report. Those are exactly the skill sets that are going to define work in 2030. And so there's a great traditional effort by the academy to impart those kind of skills that happen to be the same ones that are going to be in demand by the economy. That's a powerful place to be.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And an email from Camille downtown asking about TOPS. And for years, we've had a discussion about whether that's a good program and should it be tweaked. Your thoughts?
I think TOPS is an extraordinary program. It's a promise to Louisiana students that when you perform at a certain level, you're going to have a portion. It used to be all of it, but now you're going to have a portion of your tuition and fees covered at institutions. But I think we need to look at ways to expand that. And the Foster Promise program that LCTCS is pushing that return working adults to community and technical colleges to garner some new skill sets, I think those are great ways to take that same TOPS concept and expand it in a way that's very relevant to where we are.
And let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace, who's been waiting. Phil, good morning. Please be brief. You're on with President and Dr. Henderson. Hi, Phil. Good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah. First of all, my nephew goes to your school, and he loves it, and, you know, thank you for that. I would ask, could we do more about sending incentives for our universities and the incentives for Exxon and other businesses that are basically not really doing their part in supporting our state? Thanks.
All right.
You know, I think we have a number of employers that do a remarkable job in our state because they understand we've got, access to water, access to some good infrastructure, and I understand we're going to have some great infrastructure bills that come out of this legislative session. So I don't want to denigrate any of them. I do think that we need to invest more in higher education. When you look at the state of Alabama, and they spend $130 more in per capita state support of higher education than we do in Louisiana. $130 more per capita, so per citizen of Alabama.
Okay, got you.
It's all about priorities.
Oh, yeah. And when you're talking about almost 5 million people in the great state of Alabama, do the math. That's
a pretty good number.
That's serious money. But, you're interested in the LSU job, and I think President Henderson's made it plain that he will be a candidate. But right now, another listener says, as Tracy at the Capitol, is LSU doing the right thing by not having its people testify before the Senate committee that you just saluted a few moments ago?
You know, questioning the advice of counsel that they're following would not be appropriate. I've always been one that errs on the side of being very open and going to the table. Again, it's a place that I love to be. I think it's important that all parts of our infrastructure, whether it's at the legislature or whether it's at a faculty senate meeting, that you're being very open in your communications.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to get in under the wire with President Henderson, Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, President Henderson.
Good morning.
How can we change the emphasis on athletics to an emphasis on academic education in Louisiana, please?
Sir, it's all about leadership and you know, like I said, athletics is important, but it is a support role for universities. That what makes a university what it is two key things. One, educating students, both for career and for life. And second, research. And you think about the research that's occurring at our institutions across the state. You know, the Pfizer vaccine, I got both doses in my arms. We fully vaccinated with the 14-day wait tomorrow. Looking forward to that. But the preclinical trials of that Pfizer vaccine occurred at the New Iberia Research Center at University of Louisiana Lafayette. That's the power of research at these institutions to change lives and improve life for all of us in Louisiana.
Well, as I've stated, most people are unaware in the state that LSU won a Nobel Prize, shared it with MIT, and yet people are fully aware, I would think just about everybody in Louisiana, that LSU won the national championship in football in 2019 with a 15-0 record, and nothing wrong with that. But in the overall scheme, some people would say a Nobel Prize is just as prestigious, if not more so.
Yeah, a Nobel Prize might have even more global acclaim, and you think about the work that's occurring at that LIGO Center. My son, who is a graduate in physics, math, and chemistry, explained it to me in nauseating detail, and so I know more about that work than I probably should.
Now, as far as the job that I mentioned, you not only have to have a background in academia and know how the wheels turn in Louisiana politics, but you got to be a people person who can get along with all kinds of people. You're dealing with lawmakers from all over the state, some of whom are not as sophisticated as others, and some who are very sophisticated and probably some of the smartest people on the planet. Does it take a special skill set?
Well, in many ways it does. You know, when Admiral McCraven was the president at University of Texas for 3 years, after serving as the commander of Naval Special Forces, he said being a university president is the most difficult job in America today. In a lot of ways it is. It's because you have to be able to communicate with so many different constituent groups. I will tell you this, the one challenge with my current job is that I don't have that daily interaction with faculty and students, and we have to look for ways to manufacture that. But I think you'll find that most people that are involved in our work are truly interested in advancing institutions for the right reasons, especially when you give them a compelling message that allows them to express that in an articulate manner.
Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, you're on with Dr. Henderson. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, simply congratulations to Louisiana Tech on becoming the first university in the state to have cybersecurity as a major.
Yes. Thank you for that. Yeah. And listen, the work at Louisiana Tech is sometimes undervalued and maybe underknown. During the COVID-19 global pandemic, Tech, working with Air Force Global Strike Command, developed a data analytics model that informed them at 69 bases around the globe what to expect on the impact of the novel coronavirus. That's the kind of real-world relevant research that's occurring at these institutions. And Tech is, and along with Grambling now, Grambling has an undergraduate degree in cybersecurity. They're working very closely hand-in-hand to ensure that we're developing cyber warriors and cyber technicians for the future.
Paul Anopoulosis. Hello, Paul. You're on with Dr. Henderson.
Good morning, Dr. Henderson. Good morning. Can you reiterate the statement you said about UL Lafayette being involved with the vaccine? And one other thing, money rules. Is there any way that you would see a university such as LSU, actually at the presidency or the university receiving that academic, that Tiger Foundation sports money, instead of it sitting in one pot, everything goes to the university? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. What I talked about at UL Lafayette with the Pfizer vaccine, the preclinical trials was done at the New Iberia Primate Research Center at UL Lafayette under the guidance of UL Lafayette faculty. It's just one of the things that they do at that institution, including the Louisiana Accelerator Center that is a particle accelerator. They can look at materials at in a way that probably defies what we can talk about on the radio. And in terms of the funding that comes from athletics, you know, historically, LSU Athletics has generated a great deal of revenue to support the academic mission of the institution. Of course, I know there's been some changes to that, and I think this last year of COVID-19 has impacted academic revenues at all institutions across the country. But I do think that's a partnership, right? Athletics is part of the university.
Well, the Tiger Athletic Foundation is an institution where the records are private. We don't know how much money they raise. We don't know who makes what. And yet they're acting as an arm of the university. Is that the right way to do it?
You know, our foundations are absolutely essential to running institutions, and it would be inappropriate for me to comment on that without having more deeper conversations with folks that are in the know.
And TAF is looking for a new president as well. So there is a lot of uncertainty at LSU, and Dr. Jim Henderson is saying he is the person who can right the ship. So we wish you well, and a brave man to come on this show and tell the world that you're interested, because you do have a job that is quite substantial.
Well, Jim, that wasn't the topic of conversation. We were going to talk about the legislative session and ULS Day at the Capitol, which is the day after tomorrow. And
well, tell us about that as we near the break here, that there is a big day at the Capitol that you will be front and center, and you will be representing the University of Louisiana system.
Well, we're going to showcase the work that's occurring at our 9 institutions, and usually we have about 1,500 students we bring out to the lawn. They can interact with legislators and have a good party and show them exactly what the future of Louisiana looks like. This year it's going to be a little different. It's going to be virtual. We're going to be showcasing online through a series of events, the happenings at our schools, and I want to be very, very clear about this conversation. I love my work, and working with nine institutions that serve 92,000 students and is actually changing lives. I'll be going to graduation ceremonies over the next few weeks where I get to see the faces and the results of our work. There's nothing that gives you more intrinsic value than that.
Well, you are a man of great energy, and he is one of the people who early on in the COVID age was not hesitant to come in studio with me. So I have a soft spot in my heart for Dr. Jim Henderson, who wants to be head of LSU and is doing a good work job, most people think, is head of the ULS organization. So we'll talk more with historian Karen Cox when we return after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Katie Ann McDonald is producing, and we're joined by Karen Cox, an award-winning historian, distinguished lecturer for the Organization of American Historians. Her earlier book, Dixie's Daughters, the United Daughters of the Confederacy and Preservation of Confederate Culture, won many awards in 2004, and it is certainly relevant today, and that is a prelude to the work that we're talking about now. Publication day is today from UNC Press, No Common Ground, Confederate Monuments and the Ongoing Fight for Racial Justice, from Karen Cox. Karen, it's good to have you back on the show. Good morning to you.
Nice to be with you again, Jim.
Well, when it comes to Confederate monuments, some would say there is no common ground, and that's the title, No Common Ground. What about the polarizing debates that are continuing?
Well, this is the thing. I think that, as I say towards the conclusion of my book, that one group of people are ascribed to the lost cause version of history, and the other side of people on this debate are subscribing to the facts. And so I'm on the side of the facts. And so this debate has always been polarizing. It has been since monuments first went up in the 19th century. It continues to be so today, particularly in light of racial animosities that continue in our current political environment.
On the whole, has it been a good thing to have many of these monuments come down?
I think for the communities, I think it's in the communities where these things have been removed, and let's be clear, that it's a very small percentage that have been removed. I think these communities are probably, it marks the beginning of some healing in terms of race relations in those communities. But the vast majority remain in place. As you know, when Mitch Landrieu removed monuments in New Orleans, that didn't take place across the state.
Now, no, and in other words, there's still some Confederate monuments, more than a few in New Orleans, but symbolically, Mitch Landrieu did something which kind of started all this removal across the country. Do you think he was fully aware of the movement that he was spurring when he made that order in New Orleans that was backed by the city council?
Well, I would disagree with you that he spurred a movement, and the reason I say that is that while he was doing that, I mean, while he made a bold move, mayors across the South did not follow suit. It's been a constant battle ever since, and while he was doing that over in Alabama was passing a law that would penalize communities for removing monuments. So what happened actually in the aftermath of the Charleston massacre in 2015 was that states across the South passed monument protection laws, or what they call heritage protection mm-hmm. acts, that prevented removal. So since he did this in 2017, I think it was, then there have only been approximately 100 monuments out of more than 800 removed.
One out of eight, so that's a start, and a big start, but you're saying that the remaining 700 in some cases are now legally protected.
In many cases, yes, they are. There's been the one state where the law has been changed, which is in Virginia, is where the vast majority have been removed. But states like South Carolina or Tennessee or Alabama, a lot of these states have actually doubled down on their monument laws and strengthened them. And so it basically removes local control and prevents local governments from doing anything about the monuments in their communities.
Karen Cox's book is No Common Ground, Confederate Monuments and the Ongoing Fight for Racial Justice. How is it in North Carolina?
North Carolina is kind of an interesting case because there have been a number of removals, but we do have a law, but our law has a loophole, and one of those loopholes is that if these monuments become a public nuisance, or then the community can remove them. In other words, if these monuments might incite some sort of violence around them between protesters and defenders, then a local community can remove a monument. And so that has happened in a number of cases, and it happened at the state capitol when the governor removed monuments last summer.
Karen, what do you say to those who say we can't erase history, so these monuments should stand? There should be a plaque indicating what Robert E. Lee did and what many of these others did, and they're a fight against the United States of America. But some are saying you're opening a can of worms and that soon Andrew Jackson will come down in Jackson Square. What do you make of those who say that?
Well, first of all, what I would say is that no monument ever taught anyone a history lesson. Monuments are memorials, and a key word in memorial is memory, and memory is often faulty. And so we're not learning history from these monuments. And so removal does not mean a destruction of history. I'm a historian. I write books. I read books. I go to the archives. All that history is still available to anyone who would want to take a look at that and research it themselves. It still exists. History is not being erased. What would happen is that a statue, if it's removed, which is an icon of divisiveness and racial tension, is being removed, not history.
All right. Fairleigh Jackson of Preserve Louisiana asks, are you familiar, Karen, with the Anti-Racist Preservationist Guide to Confederate Monuments? Do you know?
No,
anything?
I'm not.
Okay. Well, this is a topic that goes on. Another listener, Heather, asks about the street names that are still in many cases in honor of Confederate icons and slave owners. Should they be changed? And in some cases they have been, but... What do you make of that issue?
I believe that that is also something that's an ongoing development because so many, it's not just monuments, it's memorials, it's street names, it's markers, it's all sorts of things that exist. These things are taking place too. In my city in Charlotte, our legacy commission appointed by the mayor has advised the change of street names. For example, Stonewall here in Charlotte is named for Stonewall Jackson. That is going to be changed. So, and sometimes these street names run through poor black communities. For example, here in Charlotte was a street named Jeff Davis that runs through a poor black community. And the people who live there know exactly who it is and who he represented. I think a changing of the street names is a useful thing because it symbolizes an effort at least at moving towards some sort of reconciliation.
Well, we thank you for joining us, and it's an important book just out, No Common Ground, from Karen L. Cox, Confederate Monuments and the Ongoing Fight for Racial Justice. And this is an issue that will continue, and we look forward to a conversation, another one, with you down the line. Always a pleasure, and congrats on your book, Karen Cox. And in our remaining moments this hour, we're joined in studio by Carmen Million, great name, like a million bucks. She's president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of South Central Louisiana. And she is here to talk about the 14th annual Free Community Shred Fest happening this Saturday, as in the 17th. What's going on?
Well, we are going to allow consumers to drive up. They don't even have to get out of their vehicles. We will unload up to three boxes or three bags of their personal financial documents that they'd like for us to destroy. And we will actually destroy those on site. And it's just a way to let people know that they need to properly dispose of their personal information because of identity theft.
Well, close to 550 people showed up for the last event held in September, right in the middle of COVID, of course. And where do they go?
Well, all they have to do is drive through the Baton Rouge Police Department parking lot. We will have signs, enter and exit. And I know last year we stopped the street on Airline because of the traffic, so it was well attended. But we are preparing for to handle even more people this year. So all they have to do is go to the Baton Rouge Police Department off Airline.
Well, AARP and the Attorney General's Office are partners in this. People can bring three bags to be shredded through a drive-through style. Now, is there a big line? Are you going to wait in line for a long time, or you get them through pretty quickly?
There's a line, but we do get them through pretty quickly. We have enough volunteers to work to unload, and we have the professional shredders there that will help us. But you don't have to get out of your vehicle. We will literally unload them and shred them right there, and you can move on.
What's the benefit? You're in the business world for shredding or for shredding documents. Why should we do it?
Well, the main thing is because we're trying to educate people on how to properly dispose of their personal financial information. According to the Federal Trade Commission, in 2020, there were 4.8 million identity theft and fraud reports received.
All right.
And that was up 45% from 2019.
What time do you get started Saturday?
9 to 12.
9 to 12. So 3 hours, and it's going to happen at the Baton Rouge Police Department.
Parking lot.
Parking lot on Airline Highway. Thank you, and let's have a longer visit sometime very soon. Carmen Million, head of the Better Business Bureau of South Louisiana. And signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.